Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. It is my great pleasure today to be joined by Alexei Petonia, who's OIES Saudi Aramco Fellow, and Ramat Poudineh, who's Senior Research Fellow and Director of the Research for the Electricity Programme at the OIES. And they're here today to discuss the key messages that came from their excellent recent paper, Ammonia as a Storage Solution for Future Decarbonized Energy Systems, that was published in November 2020. Alex and Ramat, great to have you here. Ramat, why don't I start with you, if I may. Why is there a need for long-term large-scale energy storage? Why is that?
Basically, I can mention two points. One is that the seasonal fluctuations in energy demand is quite significant in many countries around the world. This is related to winter heating in cold countries and summer cooling in hot countries, which constitute a substantial portion of the energy demand in these countries. If these level of energy demands are to be met with renewable energy without the support of storage, it would be problematic because renewable generation cannot be increased on demand to meet the peak energy consumption. There is also the possibility of the disruption to energy supply, which has always been one of the traditional motivation for having energy storage. This is specifically relevant for an energy system which is dominated by renewable energy because renewable energy's tendency to show high level of the variability and uncertainty. So it seems that storage technology that can save a substantial amount of energy for a long period of time is necessary solution to achieve decarbonization target in a sort of an efficient manner.
Interesting. So, Alex, let me pick this up again with you, if I may, Alex. You know, what are the overall options, therefore, for energy storage in an energy system?
So right now, there are more or less four major types of energy storage solutions that could be used by large-scale energy systems. So those are electrical, electrochemical, mechanical, and chemical storage options. Electrical storage options mostly relate to supercapacitors and superconductors. Electrochemical storage options are mostly known as batteries. Mechanical storage systems relate to such solutions as pumped hydro and compressed air, and also flywheels. And today we're going to talk about chemical storage options, but those are not only ammonia storage options, but also hydrogen and natural gas.
Interesting. So there are different. There are many different storage options actually, which are available for us today. Are there, Alex?
Right now, there are four types, and then chemical storage options are more or less what we're discussing right now, because those are the storage options that are of great importance, of greater range of use for the energy systems. So chemical storage options are the ones that we claim to be the most prospectively favorable for further use in the future.
Interesting. Well, look, Robert, I'd like to come back to you on that, particularly related to the chemical storage solutions. You know, why, in your opinion, are they the most promising solutions compared to the other alternatives to address the challenges of decarbonization?
Yeah, you know, David, exactly as mentioned by Alex and you, is that there are several energy storage technologies exist. But the current trend shows that the future of the energy storage technology somehow belong to either electrochemical storage like batteries or chemical storage like hydrogen or ammonia. And it is expected that they take a substantial share of the energy storage technologies in future. Chemical storages have received a special attention in recent years for some reasons. The first is that the cost of storing per kilowatt hour of the energy through chemical storages is substantially lower than that of most long-lasting batteries. The second is that the energy intensity of the chemical storage is several times higher than that of electrochemical storage, like, for instance, lithium-ion batteries. And the third, you know, interesting feature of the chemical storage is that the capacity that they can offer, which is substantially higher than many other type of the energy storages. So these features make actually the chemical storage is a hard-to-beat option when it comes to large-scale, long-term energy storage solution.
Interesting. Alex, let me pick this up with you if I can further, you know, because what are the challenges of using ammonia? What are the challenges?
So ammonia is actually not that easy to use when it comes to two major aspects. The first challenge with ammonia relates to its toxicity. Ammonia appears to be a pretty hazardous substance, and thus it needs to be stored and treated diligently in a specific way. So not everyone can treat ammonia. You cannot really use it at home without any precautionary measures. The second challenge with ammonia is its low flammability range, and that means that ammonia is not that easy to be used in a combustion system because it is not easily burned within a generator or within a combustion system. So those are the two major challenges with ammonia we explore in our paper.
I must admit, I do remember back to my chemistry classes at school some years ago, I have to say, and the smell of ammonia being pretty toxic, I have to say. But Ramak, coming to you, so what are the advantages of ammonia as a chemical storage solution?
Yeah, ammonia is a relatively easy to handle substance. It is less flammable than hydrogen, has a higher boiling point in negative terms compared with hydrogen, which basically means that it is easily liquefied and transported, which is a very important feature. The other is that the handling and shipping infrastructure for ammonia already exists. So scaling of ammonia production and distribution does not really need extensive investment in infrastructure development. Another critical feature of ammonia is that it is a compact molecule when you compare it to hydrogen. So and that basically is an interesting feature because there is a greater mass of hydrogen in 1 liter of the liquid ammonia. There is a greater mass of hydrogen in 1 liter of liquid ammonia compared to 1 liter of liquid hydrogen. And that seems a bit counterintuitive, but that's the feature of the ammonia molecule, which makes it a more efficient energy carrier than the hydrogen itself. And finally, ammonia is a sort of a unique fuel because it does not contain any carbon. So the combustion of the ammonia does not produce any carbon emission in the form of the CO2 or CO or soot. So it has these properties that makes it a sort of, you know, a useful option to be considered for storing energy.
Okay, well, Alex, can I come back to you then with perhaps a wider question, if I may? You know, in today's world, you know, what are the main applications of ammonia?
Quite surprisingly, the main application of ammonia, or most of the globally produced ammonia, is nowadays dedicated to agriculture, because ammonia is 80% of the globally produced ammonia is used for the production of fertilizers. Around 10% of the globally produced ammonia is used for the production of fibers, and roughly 4 or 5% of the globally produced ammonia is dedicated to the production of explosives. So it's below 1% of ammonia globally used or produced ammonia is used for the propulsion purposes or as a fuel. So mostly agriculture, I would say.
That's interesting. So Ramat, then, you know, what are the ways which ammonia can be integrated into the energy sector then?
Well, as mentioned previously, the ammonia can potentially be used as alternative fossil fuels in internal combustion engine and also in power generators. But application of that nature require improvement in ammonia combustion technology and also finding ways to the problem of the NOx emission, because ammonia does not produce carbon emission, but it creates another pollutants like NOx emission. The use of ammonia in fossil fuels can solve the problem of the NOx emission, but the thing is that there is a greater level of the technical challenges that need to be overcome when we use the ammonia-based fuel cells. An alternative approach is to utilize ammonia as an energy vector of the hydrogen, and that is a useful approach because the currently direct storage and the transportation of the large scale hydrogen is both challenging and also non-economic. So in our opinion, the use of ammonia as an energy vector of hydrogen is likely to be the path forward for integration of the ammonia in the energy sector.
Alex, you mentioned that 80% of ammonia is currently used in agriculture. Perhaps you could share with our listeners as to how ammonia is currently produced.
Sure. So there are three main stages in the ammonia production process. The first stage is obviously the production of hydrogen, the second one being the production of nitrogen, because those are the two components of ammonia. The third stage basically combines hydrogen and nitrogen into one substance, which is called ammonia. So most of the currently produced ammonia is produced or generated from fossil fuels or hydrocarbons, because most of the ammonia production facilities run on natural gas. This is the main feedstock for the first process and the remaining process, remaining stages in the ammonia production. The first stage is normally called this steam methane reforming, because we use natural gas or methane to produce hydrogen. And then the second stage is normally the production of nitrogen by two techniques, either through cryogenic air separation or through pressure swing adsorption. The final stage in the ammonia production process is called the Haber-Bosch process or the ammonia production loop. These are the three stages that that require a lot of energy to be used. And basically, these are the stages that are run on fossil fuels.
You say they use a lot of energy. You know, is there a percentage number, a percentage that's actually used of the energy of the final product that's used in the production?
We would probably later compare that with the electrolysis. And I should say that steam methane reforming is more efficient when it comes to energy than electrolysis, because the efficiency of steam methane reforming is up to 85%, whereas the efficiency of electrolysis is roughly up to 70%. But the percentage of energy is hard to compare with electrolysis, because electrolyzers are not that scalable at the moment. There are not that many electrolyzers that are of the same scale as the ammonia production facilities that run on fossil fuels.
Interesting. Well, Matt, if I could come back to you then, you know, and ask the question, you know, why has the penetration of ammonia in the energy sector been historically so low?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Although ammonia has a very interesting, you know, chemical properties, which makes it a suitable option for preservation of the energy for a long period of the time, but there has always been a range of technical challenges associated with direct use of ammonia as a fuel. For example, combustion of the ammonia in comparison with hydrogen has a narrower flammability range. And also, it has a higher ignition temperature and a lower combustion efficiency. The other important issue, which previously also mentioned, is the problem of the NOx emission, which needed to be solved in order to, you know, allow for penetration of the ammonia as a fuel in the energy sector. But the thing is that the low penetration of the ammonia in the energy sector may change with the growth of the hydrogen. The use of ammonia in the energy sector is contingent upon the efficient production of the zero carbon hydrogen. The recent trend shows that the cost of hydrogen for renewable is coming down, and as a result of that, the hydrogen debate is shifting from the application in only in car industry to application in the hard to decarbonize sectors, for example, like trucks, aviation, shipping, and heating application. So in future, ammonia has a great potential to be used as a energy vector of hydrogen, and it is expected to take a much higher share than the current one, which is less than 1% in the energy system.
Interesting. Alex, I'd like to come back to you and pick up, if I can, on our discussion earlier on electrolysis. You know, what are the advantages and disadvantages of electrolysis?
That's a great question. Obviously, as any other process, it has electrolysis itself has both advantages and disadvantages. The advantages of electrolysis mostly relate to the purity of hydrogen produced, because if we compare electrolysis-based hydrogen production with the steam methane reforming, the quality of hydrogen produced through electrolysis is better. It's purer. It doesn't really require any further stages of purification. In contrast to steam methane reforming, it also is less complex because of the fewer stages involved. And basically means that there are lower capital costs associated with electrolysis. And most importantly, for a zero carbon future, the electrolysis process does not require any pollution. It basically doesn't pollute the environment. There are also disadvantages related to electrolysis, and the most important disadvantages are as follows. The first one being that the ammonia production system in the world is mostly tailored for steam methane reforming and the use of natural gas for the production of ammonia. The second disadvantage that I briefly mentioned was that, or is that, electrolysis is slightly less efficient process when compared to steam methane reforming. And the final, probably one of the most important disadvantages with respect to electrolysis for the ammonia production relates to the less advantageous economics of electrolysis. Basically, that means that economics of electrolysis is weaker than economics of steam methane reforming.
So Ramat, can I come to you therefore and ask, what factors affect the choice between steam reforming with CCS and electrolysis?
There are a range of factors, David. One is the price of gas versus electricity. We know that the price for natural gas is generally several times lower than that of the electricity in most countries of the world. And that impacts the economics of the two hydrogen production methods. The other is the price of carbon and the cost of CCS. Operating CCS facilities along with conventional ammonia production obviously results in higher expenses, which needs to be considered. And the third important point is the scale of operation. The cost of steam reforming at a smaller scale is higher than the larger scale installation. In some cases, conventional smaller scale production of ammonia is more expensive even than distributed system based on electrolysis. And this has been one of the reasons that in the paper that we mentioned that the smaller scale decentralized renewable-based production of ammonia is likely to be the path forward for the future development of the green ammonia industry.
That's interesting. So, Alex, coming back to you, under what conditions, therefore, can large-scale green ammonia become cost-effective with fuel-based ammonia?
Sure, that's a great question. Right now, unfortunately, without any specific policy support, large-scale green ammonia production is not really feasible. By policy support, I mean specific carbon taxes imposed on conventional ammonia productions and other incentivizing techniques. But at the same time, there are two conditions following which green ammonia producers can still survive and be cost competitive in some specific regions of the world. And those conditions relate to the extremely low cost of renewable energy production that would probably be suitable for countries like Saudi Arabia or Australia, where the production of solar power does not cost very much and thus is competitive. And the second factor relates to the surplus of energy produced, where there's excess energy produced by renewable facilities, there is a way to produce green ammonia at competitive terms.
So Ramat, therefore, what are the key cost drivers of green ammonia production? What should we be looking out for?
I can mention of three important aspects. One is, as mentioned previously, is electricity cost. The thing is that unlike other energy resources like gas and oil, which can be the feedstock for ammonia production, electricity does not have a global market. So the cost of electricity is quite different across different countries of the world because of the difference in the generation mix. And also the government policies in relation to taxation or subsidies that exist in the electricity sector. The other aspect is capital costs. For large scale facilities, capital costs of the green ammonia is higher than conventional technology of the same size. But for the smaller scale, it is potentially lower. But the good thing is that nowadays, the smaller scale ammonia production can be organized in modular space. The cost of these standard modular units is low because there is no need for integrated front end. So all elements of the ammonia production system can be disintegrated without significant loss of economic efficiency. And the third important point is in relation to operation and maintenance costs. With respect to operation specifically, the load factor of the green ammonia generation facility is very important because of the use of intermittent renewable resources. And that needs to be taken into account because it directly influences the productivity of the ammonia generation plants and also ultimately the cost of the final product.
Interesting. Alex, can I come back to you to talk about the transportation of ammonia? Because Ramat mentioned earlier on the ability to use existing infrastructure, you know, but what are the methods of ammonia transportation?
Sure. Basically, just as in many other cases with the gases, ammonia can be transported by land transport, like railroads and trucks. It could also be transported by maritime transport, specific vessels, specially tailored vessels. But we should not also omit pipelines as a very promising transport mode for ammonia because just as Dr. Pudin mentioned, because of the specific structure of ammonia molecule containing three atoms of hydrogen and one atom of nitrogen, ammonia pipelines appear to be almost twice as efficient as hydrogen pipelines.
Okay, Ramat, let me come to you therefore and talk about the cost of transportation of ammonia. How does that compare versus hydrogen for, say, short, medium and long-term distances?
Good question, David. For short distances, road transport is typically used for less than 1,000 kilometers, but it is the most expensive option for transporting both types of substance, both hydrogen and ammonia. Rail is another option that is often used for medium distances, and it is quite cheaper compared to road transport. The other thing is that for very long distances, over 4,000 kilometers, the most efficient option is maritime transport. As mentioned by Alex, pipeline is also another option for long distances, which has been used in some places, like for instance in the USA. And pipeline for ammonia has a sort of higher efficiency compared to hydrogen because of the structure of the ammonia molecule, which has three atoms of the hydrogen. And overall, in terms of the transportation of the two substances, we can say that the delivering ammonia by any transport means is generally cheaper than transporting hydrogen. But we have to consider something else. If we consider the full cycle of production of the ammonia and the final cost of the composition of the ammonia and recovering the hydrogen, then delivering the, using ammonia as an energy vector of the hydrogen only become cheapest way of, transferring hydrogen over the long distances, very long distances, I mean, more than 4,000 kilometers.
Well, look, Alex and Ramat, we're coming to the end of our time, but I always like to end up podcast by trying to look forward, to be visionary. So Ramat, let me kind of give you the last word, if I may. What could the future look like for integration of ammonia in the energy sector? What's your view on that?
Thank you very much, David, for this question. The thing is that the interest is in the ammonia seems to be on the rise. As an energy vector of the hydrogen, it represents an important, means of preserving a large quantity of energy for a long period of time. The key challenge in relation to ammonia is how to produce it carbon free. In short to medium term, it is very likely that green ammonia is conducted in a small scale in specific geographic regions where the cost of renewable is very low, and also there is excessive renewable generation. For large-scale ammonia, we need policy and regulatory support if we want it to be, the scale of the green ammonia substantially increased. And these can be in the form of the carbon taxation or any other alternative fuel that gives some sort of economic advantage to large-scale ammonia and make it attractive to investors.
Well, Alex and Ramat, thank you so much for your time. I have to say, in the industry, there's certainly a huge amount of focus on ammonia as a storage option. And I've really enjoyed, I've learned a lot, I have to say, by listening to you today. And certainly the conversation builds on the messages from your recently published paper, Ammonia as a Storage Solution for Future Decarbonized Energy Systems. So I hope you have all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye. to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity, or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.